Okay, our next presenter is Jennifer Walsh. She is a research scientist in the Centers of Behavioral and Preventive Medicine at the Miriam Hospital and an assistant professor of psychiatry and human behavior at the Warren Alpert Medical School of Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. She is a developmental psychologist with expertise in HIV and STI prevention, sexual health and risk-taking in adolescence and emerging adulthood, and advanced statistical methods.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for being here. Hopefully, you'll find this to be an interesting complement to the previous presented research with a very different sample. I'm afraid to say it's all women, but I do have nothing to disclose, but I would like to acknowledge my co-authors on this project, Robin Fielder, Michael Carey, and Kate Carey. Some background we probably don't need at this point in this symposium, but we know that STIs are an unplanned pregnancy affect many young people. 20 million new STI cases each year, and young adults account for 50% of all gonorrhea infections and 75% of all chlamydia infections, despite the fact that they make up only 25% of the active sexually active population. Additionally, we know U.S. women ages 18 to 19 experience very high pregnancy rates, exceeding rates in other industrialized nations. Dual method use, as we just heard, involves using one form of contraception to reduce the risk of STIs and another to prevent pregnancy. And this is the most effective way to prevent STIs and unintended pregnancy. Despite the efficacy of dual method use, uptake remains low when reviews suggested between 12 and 23%, though I think we have a lot of different numbers on this. Also, we know that rates of condom use actually decline with the introduction of hormonal contraception among young people, so they're actually sort of conflicting methods for most people. And increasing dual method use among young women is a goal of Healthy People 2020. To promote greater uptake of dual method use, it's essential to know more about prevalence, use patterns, and associated characteristics. But most previous studies have either focused on younger adolescents, investigated a small number of potential predictors, or used what I call global association methods, despite the inconsistency of condom use, which we did see in the previous study as well. And no prior studies that I'm aware of have taken an event-level approach to examining characteristics associated with dual method use across multiple sexual episodes per person. So our research questions here are, first, what is the prevalence of dual method contraception use among first-year college women? And second, what characteristics are associated with dual method use? Our participants here were 296 first-year college women at a private Northeastern university. The huge majority were age 18, and about three-quarters were white. These were recruited via a mass mailing sent to all incoming first-year female students. And those women then completed 12 consecutive monthly surveys online. And women were included in the current analyses as long as they reported at least one sexual intercourse event during the year. They did not have to be sexually active at the beginning of the study. And in total, these women reported on 1,843 sexual intercourse events. The measures in the study are at three levels. I'm going to breeze over them, but happy to answer questions later. The first were at the sexual event level, and these are specific to one particular sexual event. So during each of the 12 monthly surveys, women who had reported engaging in sex during the previous month reported on their most recent encounter involving oral, vaginal, or anal sex with both a romantic and a casual partner. So those are two separate reports. So then each participant could report between 0 and 2 events per month and between 0 and 24 events total. And events were included in this analysis, obviously due to the interest in contraception, only if they occurred in the month immediately preceding each data collection, so it was a new, unique, recent event, and also if it involved vaginal sex. Participants reported all methods of contraception that they had used, and this was a checklist. They could indicate multiple methods. We coded those into male or female condom use, other reliable contraception, such as the pill, patch, ring, or an IUD, and other less reliable methods, withdrawal, a diaphragm, cervical cap, or sponge, or fertility awareness. Participants also reported whether they had drank alcohol and used marijuana before each event. And then they reported their partner type. For romantic partners, which we defined as someone whom you were dating or in a romantic relationship with at the time of the physical intimacy, participants reported their relationship duration with that partner, and that was coded into new partners of 1 month or less, or established romantic partners of more than 1 month. For events with casual partners, defined as someone whom you are not dating or in a romantic relationship with at the time of the physical intimacy, and there was no mutual expectation of a romantic commitment, some people call these hookups. Participants reported who their partner was for the event, a stranger, an acquaintance, a friend, an ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend, or other. At the month level, so these were reported every month by participants, but were not specific to one sexual event. We had the month of data collection during the school year. Also the romantic relationship duration. So even if they're reporting an event with a casual partner, they could be in another romantic relationship. Also their number of days consuming four or more drinks on one occasion, their number of days using marijuana, and whether or not they were a smoker during that month. They also reported their number of other intercourse events with both romantic and casual partners, and their number of other partners that were both romantic and casual during that particular month. And finally, the number of months they had been using hormonal contraception so far in college. At the person level, these were collected only once during the year. We had some sexual history variables, including number of pre-college intercourse partners and the presence of a pre-college STI diagnosis or pregnancy. Also, an item measuring their perceived risk of being infected with an STI. We assessed four parental or peer factors, including parental connectedness, their perceived parental attitudes towards birth control, parental communication, and peer communication regarding sex. And finally, well, maybe not finally, but three personality measures, impulsivity, sensation-seeking, and conscientiousness. And finally, four demographic variables, which we controlled for age, race, and ethnicity, SES, and religiosity. Sorry, that was a lot of measures, but our method of data analysis was multi-level modeling, which was used to assess variables associated with dual method use. First, we looked at predictors of hormonal contraception at the month and person level, and then we looked at predictors of condom use during events that also involved hormonal contraception at the event, month, and person level. As I mentioned, there were 1,843 events nested within 296 women, and we handled missing data using multiple imputation, even though we had very high completion rates. You'll see there are almost 12 surveys out of 13 per women. So here we see the prevalence of contraception use. This is the percentage of events reported which involved each form of contraception use. So we see that only three common methods are male condoms used in 61% of events, the pill patch or ring used in 53% of events, and withdrawal used in 30% of events. The female condom, injectable hormones, IUDs, fertility awareness, and diaphragms were very infrequently used. We also see only 6% of events in this population involving no method of contraception use. In terms of dual method use, we see 28% of women combining condoms and hormonal contraception, which is what we consider dual method use in this study. We also see 13% of women combining condoms with less reliable forms of contraception, such as withdrawal, 14% combining hormonal methods with less reliable methods, 45% combining any two methods, and 5% combining all three of these, so condoms, hormonal, and the less reliable method. The patterns of contraception use, which I think really show the necessity of using event-level data for this kind of question, we see that 27% of women are inconsistent hormonal contraception users across the year. So they're using hormonal contraception during some but not all events. Similarly, for condoms, we see that 43% of women sometimes use condoms and sometimes don't. And for dual method use, we see only 14% of women report dual method use during all the sexual events during the year. 33% are inconsistent users and 53% are never using dual methods. So here, getting to the key questions, first, predictors of hormonal contraception use. We see that women are more likely to report use of hormonal methods if they are having more intercourse events with romantic partners during a month. Also, if they perceive their parents to have more positive attitudes towards birth control. Meanwhile, they're less likely to use hormonal methods if they are older, if they are African American, or if they are more religious. And we're explaining a fair amount of the variance both within and between women here. And then looking at the predictors of dual method use, we see that women are more likely to use a condom in addition to hormonal methods if they are reporting an intercourse event with a friend, if they are more religious, if they have experienced a pre-college STI diagnosis, and they're less likely to do so if they are using a less reliable method, so say withdrawal, If they have been using hormonal contraception for more months during college, they're less likely to use dual methods. Also, if they are older, and if they have more pre-college sexual partners. And again, here we're explaining 29% of the variance within and 20% of the variance between. So in summary, dual method use occurred in only a quarter of events reported by college women. Women were less likely to use dual methods as they gained experience with hormonal contraception and if they were using a less reliable contraceptive method. So these women may feel more confident that they're protected from pregnancy, but these methods don't protect against STI transmission. So with this young population that's often switching partners, this might be a concern. Also, women with previous STI diagnoses were more likely to engage in dual contraception use. However, risk perceptions did not relate to dual use. And our explanation for this was that women with past diagnoses may perceive themselves as being at lower risk of STI infection now because they are more likely to use condoms. Women were more likely to use dual methods when engaging in sex with friends. A note here is that although hookups are often framed in a negative light, this finding does suggest that some of these hookup experiences may involve protection from both STIs and pregnancy. And a final note here is that substance use was not associated with dual method use, and this does contrast with some previous event level findings, so it requires some more exploration. Limitations. Our data came from first-year college women at one university. We, of course, can't determine cause and effect here. Some of these predictors I've described to you could actually be outcomes of dual method use. Some variables were assessed only once during the year. It'd be great to assess them more often. We also didn't, unfortunately, in this study, have any proximal variables such as attitudes, norms, intentions, those kind of things. So in future research, I'd love to have some data from males, from non-college attending youth. Also to think about correct condom use in line with what we saw in the past presentation. And also have assessment of both these event level predictors, which I think are really important, but also things from health behavior theory, such as attitudes, norms, intentions. Understanding characteristics associated with dual use may help design interventions. Women may need to be counseled on the importance of maintaining condoms as their sexual relationships become more serious, as they gain experience with hormonal contraception, and even when they're also using these less reliable methods, such as withdrawal. And the inconsistency of dual method use among college women indicates the need to explore associated characteristics using event-level time-varying data rather than cross-sectional data. And finally, I'd like to acknowledge our grant support from NIAAA and also from NIMH. Thank you. Yeah, so, yeah, we were only assessing hormonal use. We did assess it at every event, but women didn't often report, only a few women reported multiple sexual events per month because they would have to have one with a casual partner and one with a romantic partner. So this did mean, like, either they initiated use during their first year of college with hormonals or they stopped using them. I think it was about, 30%. Started using it and it divided about evenly across those three categories. So some women really were just reporting it like in September and December, but not in other months. So I don't know why, if they were inconsistently using it then or what was going on, but.
Hi. I had a question when I saw the graph that showed, I think it was like 6% that used no method.
Yeah.
And that seemed sort of astonishing. And it made me wonder, just like when people are dieting and they suggest that you write down the food you eat every day because that in and of itself will help you eat better, do you think that having these people fill out the survey every month actually impacted the behavior?
It didn't seem to change a lot. I wrote another paper with this data set about their condom use over time. We actually saw declines in condom use over time, so I didn't get a sense there was a big demand characteristic in that way. I do think maybe they see the list and they're like, oh, I should pick one of these. No method was on the list, but it was at the bottom. And also, I think one reason we're seeing this is because a lot of studies obviously grouped into no method would be things like withdrawal, which is really not a very effective method. Since they checked that here, they weren't considered to have no method. So in our study, kind of, if you think about the less reliable methods, is also representing sort of a failure to use contraception that would line up better with, I think, other studies. Yes? Yeah, so two things worth mentioning there. One is that we had in-person surveys the very first month, and then after that they were doing them online, and I think that really helped with our retention. You could worry about reliable data in that setting, but they didn't have to actually say anything to an interviewer. They were doing it on their computer. And the other thing I was going to say is that we did include the month of data collection in our models to see if there was any effective time here, and unfortunately for my developmental perspective, but also kind of answering your question, that was not a significant predictor here. So once you accounted for other factors, time alone wasn't having any impact here. So, all right, I'm probably out of time. I'm happy to answer other questions after.